It's happy seed.
It's 8:30 New York time. Time to wake up America and stump the experts. Each week at this time, Lucky Strike offers you an opportunity to reduce the swelling on the heads of four famous intellectual giants. For every question we use, Lucky Strike pays out $10 plus a copy of the new Information Please quiz book. If your question stumps us, you get $25 more plus a 24-volume set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Send your questions to Information Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. If our editorial staff edits your questions a bit, don't fret over it. In case of similarity, we'll have to be sole judge of who shall be paid, and all questions become the property of Information Please. And now, out of a lucky strike, as I present our master of ceremonies, the literary critic of the New Yorker magazine, Clifton Fadiman. Mr. Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, as ever, Information Please is completely unrehearsed, informal, and quite go as you please. Tonight, our two regulars are here, John Kiram, the sports maestro, and Franklin P. Adams of the New York Post's Conning Tower. Our two guests are, in a sense, competitors, because they're both famous authors, and they're both top-notch foreign correspondents. One of them, John Gunther, is an old friend of ours, and the other, Walter Durante, we are very glad to welcome as a new friend. Now remember, for each question missed, Lucky Strike rings up $25, and that's paid out to the sender, plus 24 volumes of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Now we'll start with a question coming to us from Harry Cheney of Los Angeles. Get 3 out of 4 on this very simple question, gentlemen. What is the term of surrender in each of these contests? In chess, when you surrender, you do what, Mr. Kieran?
You are mated in chess.
And not only in chess, but that's not surrender, necessarily. When you actually do give up in chess, what do you say? What's the term that you use?
Resign.
Resign, that's right. That's
what
I'm
trying to say. Resign without being mated, you may be thoroughly discouraged and see no way out.
Yes, that so often happens. How about, in the case of a naval battle, when you surrender, you do what?
Strike the flag.
Strike the colors or the flag, as Mr. Durante says. Mr. Gunther had his hand up, too. The term of surrender in the case of a political election. In the case of a political election, Mr. Gunther.
Well, you concede defeat.
You concede the election, that's right. And when two kids are fighting, and one of them wishes to surrender, Mr. Adams.
Enough.
Well, we used to use a different term. There's another term, Mr. Kieran?
Cry uncle?
Cry uncle is the one we used to use, but I think enough perfectly all right.
That's kind of new, isn't it?
The next question comes from Joe Barnes of the Herald Tribune right here in New York. And directed really at Mr. Gunther and Mr. Durante, but you other boys can play along with us if you wish. Now, Mr. Durante and Mr. Gunther, can you imagine that you were really back in Europe, as you used to be in the old days, actually doing a full day's job instead of the sort of thing you're doing now, just answering questions?
Are you sure we ever did a full day's job?
Oh, I'm positive. I remember that day, as a matter of fact. Now, what would you make of this message, gentlemen, if you received it tonight by cable from Europe? Now, here's the message. Servicer, up look, favorite obit, big shot, down shot, pre-dawn, smorning. I'll go over all this, gentlemen. Junkering, redsward, sans shoot, come goal, quote, save humanity, unquote, bracket, hallelujah, unbracket. Now let's begin. Servicer would mean what, Mr. Gunther?
Well, I suppose it means to the correspondent.
From the correspondent. Well, it means it's a service message, does it not, in the cable line?
Yeah.
Now, here's the next phrase. Up look, favorite obit. Up look, favorite obit. What does that mean, Mr. Kieran?
That would mean dig out, get ready the obit of the person you would like most to publish an obit about.
Yes, and we know who that is. Yeah. Beg pardon? Now let's go on with it. Big shot, down shot, pre-dawn, this morning. Mr. Gunther.
The chief was shot down before dawn today, this morning.
Yes,
morning.
The big shot in this case probably being...
Mr. Hitler.
Mr. Hitler, yes, as a guest. Junkering... Redsward. Junkering Redsward.
Flying to Moscow.
Flying to Moscow.
Russia.
How?
In a Junker.
In a Junker airplane, yes.
Sans shoot
would mean what, Mr. Durante? Sans shoot.
Without a parachute.
Without a parachute, Mr. Adams. Right, Larry. That's very quick of you, Mr. Adams. Come goal, quote, save humanity, unquote. Come goal, quote, save humanity.
Go or gold?
Gold. G-O-A-L. Come goal.
Some goals.
Oh, in order to win the war.
Beg pardon?
In order to win the war.
No. The word come means what?
With. Come with. Goal.
With goal.
With the purpose of.
Quote.
Yeah.
Save humanity. Is there any other recent German emissary who's had that purpose in mind flying?
Oh, Mr. Hess.
Mr. Hess, yes. In other words, he was flying toward the Reds with a parachute, without a parachute, I hope, with a goal similar to Hess's of saving humanity. And bracket, hallelujah, unbracket means simply what?
Do we have to say?
Sure.
Goody, goody.
Goody, goody, yes. Yeah. Just hallelujah. As a matter of fact, Mr. Durante, it doesn't seem to me you save very much money using those, that odd letter.
I never do use them.
You never do use them?
Never.
Just write at the expense of paper.
Knobs.
Yes, I see. And how does the boss like that when you do that?
Oh, New York Times is rich.
It's very rich.
Karen?
The next one from Norma Lay of Elmira, New York. It's about burial. Gentlemen, get 2 out of 3. Who is referred to as being buried in the following places, all of which, by the way, are watery places. Now, in the first case, Full Fathom 5. Mr. Kieran.
Thy father lies, his bones are Carl made. That's supposed to be the father of Ferdinand, I believe the king of Naples.
Yes, that's a perfect response.
In the Tempest.
In the Tempest. Do you remember his name?
Not
a very important character. Alonso.
Oh, Alonso.
Alonso, that's right. The next one, next burial, in the Billowy Wave. The Billowy Wave. Mr. Adams.
Titwillow.
Titwillow. Little Tom Tit. What's the quotation?
And he threw himself into the billowy wave.
Plunged, maybe. Plunged himself into the billowy wave, and an echo arose.
From the suicide's grave.
Oh,
Willow. Titwillow. Titwillow.
Titwillow. Very nice. Thank you very much. Now, who is referred to as being buried in, quote, the raging brine? Though sometimes I believe it's the foaming brine. You may have your choice. The raging brine, the foaming brine. Mr. Adams, I can see you struggling to get it. You almost have it, Mr. Adams. Mr. Gunther.
I just want to know if the next rhyme is encarnadine.
No. Beautiful rhyme, but that isn't it. No, the next rhyme... The next rhyme.
Clementine.
I beg pardon?
Clementine.
Attaboy, Mr. Adams. Very, very good. She led her ducks down the river. The weather, it was fine. You remember how it goes, Mr. Adams? Stubbed her toe against a sliver.
Fell into the foaming brine.
Yes. You say foaming, I say raging. And so forth. That gives us 3 out of 3.
My darling right, Clementine, it is.
My darling. Oh, my darling. Oh, my darling Clementine. She's lost and gone forever.
Oh, you have it now, Mr. Durant.
Things are so a little slow, you know.
There's no keeping a secret from you, is
there? You sure can take a hint, Mr. Durant. Now, the next one is from Louise Marshall of Lowell, Massachusetts. Get 2 out of 3 again. 2 of the 3 events in each group that I'm going to read to you occurred in the same year. Which events are they, and what year was it? In other words, 2 of them occurred in the same year and 1 of them in a different year. The first 5-year plan, St. Louis lost the series in 4 straight. The stock market collapsed.
Two of those events.
Mr. Durante.
The stock market collapsed in the first 5-year plan.
The stock market collapsed in the first 5-year plan? No.
Yes.
No, not really. Well, we may be wrong, Mr. Durante. I'll argue with you in a minute. Mr. Gunther.
I wouldn't dream of contradicting Mr. Durante, but I think the first 5-year plan started in October 1928.
Yes, that's right. And when did Mr. Kieran, how about St. Louis?
Well, that's how I would have guessed the other one right. St. Louis lost 4 straight to the Yankees in 1928.
How about it, Mr. Durante?
Yeah, well, I have a rebuttal.
It started theoretically
in 1928 in October, but later on they counted from the 1st of 1929.
Your type of expert needs an hour program. Well, I think that Mr. Gunther and Mr. Kieran nevertheless are right, and we have to mark that as wrong. The first 2 events occurred in 28, and of course the stock market collapsed in 29, as a few of us oldsters remember. Now, the Italo-Ethiopian War begins, prohibition is repealed, there's a blood purge in Germany. 2 of those occurred in the same year. Which ones? Mr. Gunther, you had your hand up first.
Well, I have to work backwards. The Italo-Ethiopian War began in 1935, and the Hitler blood purge was in June 1934.
Keep going. You're wrong. You're half right, half wrong. Ethiopian War, gentlemen, was in what year? Mr. Kieran?
33 was the repeal of prohibition.
Yes, that's right. And the Ethiopian War was in what year?
35.
No, in 34.
I really beg your pardon.
Sure it was not.
Really? I really beg your pardon.
Hitler Blutschberg was June the 30th, 1934.
Well, do you mean to say that we'll risk a lot of reactionaries pushing things back?
You're going to have to do a lot of explaining next week. The Italo-Abyssinian War began on October 3rd, 1935.
I've never heard it said more dogmatically, Mr. Governor. Now, you may be quite right. I'm going to stick to my card until I receive advice to the contrary from another set of experts we have here behind the scenes. And call that wrong. Now, how about this one? Here's a set of three events. Two of them occurred in the same year. The other didn't. Braddock defeated Bayer, the bank holiday, and the Reichstag fire. On my card, that's spelt without quotation marks.
You mean the American bank holiday?
The American bank holiday, yes. Mr. Adams.
That was in March 1933.
Keep going. Yep. Mr. Adams?
The other boys can take those other dates. I didn't have a nickel.
Mr. Gunther.
The Reichstag fire was in 1933. Both in March.
Really?
Yes.
The last two were in 1933. Then that's right. You're right. And Braddock defeated Bayer in what?
I think it was around 1936.
1935.
Five?
Yeah.
That's right. He skipped the year.
Well, we got this one right. That gives us only one right out of three and sent $25 to Miss Marshall, courtesy of Lucky Strike, plus a set of the Encyclopedia Britannica.
When are you going to check up about the Italo-Ethiopian War?
Almost immediately.
Well, it's gone.
You're kind of worried about that, aren't you?
No, I'm not worried. You should be.
I stick to my card. My card has a beautiful memory, generally. Here's one from Mr. W.C. Johnson of Frederick, Oklahoma. Can you name three novels or plays in which a leading character is executed? Mr. Durante, will you start us off?
Sidney Carton in A Tale of Two Cities.
That would be quite right. Mr. Kieran?
That's mine, too.
I'm so sorry. You should never have done that, Mr. Durante. There are a number of others we might think of. Mr. Gunther?
The hero of Stendhal's, Rouge et Noir.
Yes, there's one. That gives us two. Oh, think of... Want me to give you a hint? Think of a play. Very well, that's...
Joan of Arc.
Joan of Arc. St. Joan.
Yes.
St. Joan by George Bernard Shaw. And there are a number of others. An American Tragedy by Dreiser. Tess of the D'Urbervilles by Thomas Hardy as an executioner.
Native Son.
Native Son. Very good, Mr. Adams. That would give us four or five. And here's one from Noel Gordon of Detroit. Each of the following places has been mentioned in connection with the present invasion of Russia. Russia, by the way, is a place that Mr. Gunther once referred to as Durante's Inferno. Can you give another occasion on which each of these places played an important role historically? Now, we want to get two out of three if we can on that. Now, the first is Brest-Litovsk. We've been reading about that recently. Mr. Kieran.
That was where the peace treaty was signed between the Central Powers and Russia in World War Number One.
That's exactly right. What date?
That was...
Okay, better not ask anything about date.
In 1917, I believe.
No. Mr. Durante.
March 1918.
Yes. You and I are right, Mr. Durante. March 1918. That's quite right, Mr. Kieran. Now, how about, here's another Russian name that's been mentioned in dispatches lately. Where else, when else was it mentioned? Sevastopol. Mr. Gunther.
Oh, during the Crimean War.
During the Crimean War. It was the scene of what?
A battle.
Well, I think more than a battle. Mr. Kieran.
Well, it was near the scene of the charge of the Light Brigade.
Mr. Durant.
That was
the great siege. The siege. It was the central point which they besieged. And the French took the Redan, and that won the city.
Yes. What was the one you mentioned, Mr. Adams?
Balaclava was the Light Brigade.
Oh, I thought that was a Turkish candy, Balaclava. How about the Berezina River? The Berezina River. Mr. Durante.
Well, that is where Napoleon fought his last battle on Russian soil.
Yes.
Which was disastrous.
What day?
December 1812.
1812 would be right. Now, as long as we're talking about Russia, as so many of us are these days, I should like to take the opportunity of asking our two foreign correspondents what, in general, say about 20 words, they think of the present situation. Mr. Gunther, would you care to give an opinion on what's happening over there and what you think may... come out of it?
In 20 words?
Well, I'll give you 22. And a date.
It's terribly hard to tell because so much depends on totally intangible factors like morale. I should think, not really knowing, Germans wouldn't have tried a campaign of such magnitude unless they were fairly sure that they could crack Russian morale in a reasonably short term. As to actual military operations, I don't know. I'd very much like to hear Mr. Durandy's opinion.
Oh,
on the whole, I'm
Mr.
just a little bit gloomy tonight, but maybe I won't be so gloomy tomorrow.
I hope you won't be.
I hope so, too.
Mr. Durandy, do you have an opinion on it?
I'm less gloomy than most of the experts. The two facts, the fact of morale, obviously applies. But the main question is whether the Russians are holding the line which they originally fortified. They spent 7 years fortifying it, and all their subsequent occupations, Riga, Estonia, Finland, Bessarabia, were all outposts as a glacis for the attack which they knew was coming. And now, are they fighting their main battle in the outer line? I don't see why they should, and I don't believe they are.
Well, in other words, you're much more optimistic about things than Mr. Gunther.
Considerably more optimistic. I think that now the real opposition may begin.
Yes, but perhaps we shall know in a very few days. Or do you feel, as so many do, that this is the sort of war that will not be decided for a very, very long time?
If Stalin has his nerve, there's three morales. There's the morale of the government, the morale of the people, and the morale of the army. Most important is Stalin's morale. If that keeps up, the war may go on for 5 years.
Oh, we must keep it up, by all means. Thank you very much, Mr. Gunther and Mr. Durandy. Now, so far, Lucky Strike has paid out $25 and one set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Now, on this July 4th, Mr. Cross sets off a firecracker of his own.
That's right, Mr. Fadiman. I want to explode at least one ancient fallacy about tobacco. The one which suggests that all tobacco is, after all, pretty much the same. As tobacco experts will tell you, the finer, lighter, naturally milder leaf, the kind you enjoy in Lucky's, tastes better, smokes milder, offers you much more enjoyment. So, of course, it costs more, too. But Lucky Strike pays the price to get it. For example, at auctions in Greensburg, Kentucky last season, the American Tobacco Company paid 22% more per pound for the tobacco it bought for its cigarettes and other tobacco products. Yes, 22% above the average market price paid for all the various types and grades of tobacco sold there. And the best we bought goes into Lucky's. So, ladies and gentlemen, there you have the reason why Lucky's are a milder, better-tasting cigarette. Mr. Fadiman, have I demonstrated it's the tobacco that counts?
You have, Mr. Cross, and in just 56 seconds. Now, here's a question coming to us from Henrietta J. Barrow of this city. Very simple question. What have the following in common? The eldest Miss Sutherland, the whining schoolboy, Dopey, and Adam Walsh. What have they in common?
What was the first one?
The eldest Miss Sutherland. A little before your time, Mr. Gunther. The eldest Miss Sutherland, the whining schoolboy, Dopey, and Adam Walsh. What do they have in common, Mr.
The eldest Miss Sutherland of the... who had six sisters?
Yes, she did.
I suppose hair.
Now, let's see. You mean the whining schoolboy, Dopey? As a matter of fact, Dopey was practically bald. I don't think that would work out very well.
I don't know where she comes in with the seven Sutherlands.
Give it up, eh? How about it, Mr. Kieran? Mr. Gunther?
The number seven.
Attaboy. That's very good.
The number seven.
Prove it.
Oh, dear. I got it from Dopey, and Mr. Adams is mentioning of seven sisters.
How about fixing it up, Mr. Kieran?
Well, the whining schoolboy was one of the seven ages of man.
Yes.
And Dopey was one of the seven dwarfs, right. And Adam Walsh was the center and leader of the seven mules of the four horsemen team at Notre Dame.
That's perfect. I think that question has been answered correctly by Mr. Gunther and Mr. Kieran once Mr. Adams started them off. Here's one from Norman L. Folger of Summit, New Jersey. Get 2 out of 3. Give the name of the minister in the British cabinet corresponding to each of...
Principal Secretary for Foreign Affairs.
Well, that's very elegant. Is that exactly what it's called, Mr. Gunther? Thank you very much. Now,
His Britannic Majesty.
His Britannic Majesty, yes. Now, our Secretary of War is Mr. Henry Stimson. Who is his opposite number in England? Mr. Durandy.
Captain Margeson.
Captain David Margeson. And yes, and what's his office called? Well, this is something pretty simple.
Secretary for War.
No. No, Mr. Adams.
Britannic Majesty's Minister of War.
I think, yes. Just Minister of War. If you want to use Mr. Gunther's elaborate phrase to be even more precise, that would be true, too. Now, our Secretary of the Navy is Mr. Frank Knox. What is his, Mr. Gunther?
Mr. A.V. Alexander.
I think he has a title.
No, the Right Honorable.
Right Honorable.
Right Honorable. Privy Counselor.
Yes, and what is his office called?
Well, he is called the
first lord of the Admiralty.
First lord of the Admiralty, yes. That's quite right, yes. That gives him a three out of three. How about this one? That was very easy, I think. From Frank Morrill of Portland, Maine. This is about poetry. I'm going to ask you to identify the poem in which the poet does the following things. In the first case, get two out of three on this, he recalls the advice he was given when he reached his majority. Can you identify the poem in which that occurs? He recalls the advice he was given when he reaches his when he reached his majority. Mr. Adams.
That would might be the poem beginning, "You Are Old, Father William."
I don't quite see how that would work in, Mr. Adams.
Can I?
If it my youth.
In Southey's poem, it's
that. That may be it.
Southey's poem, it's
that. That may be it.
Southey's poem, it's
that. That may be it.
In Southey's poem, it's that.
That may be it.
In Southey's poem, it's that.
That may be it.
Southey's poem, it's
that. That may be it.
In Southey's poem, it's
that. That may be it.
Southey's poem, it's
that. That may be it.
In Southey's poem, it's
that. That may be it.
In Southey's poem, it's
that. That may be it. I was thinking of, yes, who wrote that?
It's either Houseman or...
It's only Houseman.
It is Houseman, as Mr. Kern was about to recollect. Mr. Kern, how do the lines go? Do you remember?
No, I forgot.
When I was 1 and 20, I heard a wise man say...
Give crowns...
and pounds and guineas, but not your heart away.
That's right. That's the advice. Well, that straightens us out. Now, how about this one? Identify the poem in which the poet describes an old man... recalling his youth as a lawyer. An old man recalling his youth as a lawyer. Mr. Kern.
Well, you mean in Hamlet, in the grave scene, where be his quiddities now, and what action he would take for battery against the grave digger throwing his skull around?
That's a subtle one. I hadn't thought about that. That might get by. In fact, I think it will get by. Mr. Adams.
That's the one I said first.
That's right. Say it again.
You are old, Father William, and it ends in my... I took to the law.
Yes, and argued each case,
and argued each case with my wife.
And the muscular strength that it gave to my jaw has lasted the rest of my life.
Thank you. That's right. Now, how about this one? Can you identify the poem in which the poet pleads for a childhood protector? He pleads for a childhood protector.
How old is he?
Who? Who? You mean the poet? Well, when the poet the poet is old and remembers himself as a child. Mr. Chern, did you have it? Mr. Adams?
Backward, turn backward.
Don't see how that applies. A childhood protector. Woodman, spare that tree, touch not a single bough, remember
in
youth?
It sheltered me.
And I'll
and
protect,
I'll
it,
protect
now.
It now.
That's right. Well, that gives us two out of three. Last one we got wrong. Now, how about this one from May E. Teal of Delaware County, Pennsylvania? Speaking of international affairs in the 20th century, as seems proper with two experts on them here this evening, in what movement or agreement was the United States one of 21 nations? Mr. Gunther.
Well, the Havana Conference is one of the most recent of them.
How many were there? 21?
There are 21 American republics.
Yes.
20 in Latin America and the United States.
And were there 21 represented at Cuba?
I believe so,
in
yes.
Cuba? Was there any other that you can think of, Mr. Kieran?
There was one further down, way down in South America.
Yes.
They have them every 3 or 4 years. There's one at Lima, one at Panama, one at Montevideo.
Yeah, I think that's probably the one Mr. Kieran was thinking of, the one in Lima, the Pan-American Conference in 1938. Now, in what movement or agreement was the United States one of nine nations? One of nine nations. Mr. Durante.
Kellogg Pact?
No, I think not.
The Nine Pact back to China.
That's right. What date?
22.
Mm-hmm. 1921 or 22. I think I'm going to be generous with you. Guarantors of Chinese integrity. Now, in which agreement was the United States one of 15 original signatories? One of 15. Mr. Gunther.
This is a guess, but there was a conference in Brussels at the beginning of the Sino-Japanese War. I think 15 nations took part.
I wouldn't know, and I would hesitate to contradict you. The one I had in mind was the Kellogg-Briand Pact that Mr. Durante impulsively mentioned a little while ago, also called the Pact of Paris in 1928. Well, that gives us two out of three. Can you identify this one? See what you can do with this one. This comes from W. Everett Zilm of Philadelphia. Can you give me four cliches or common expressions that mention denominations of American money? For example, a penny for your thoughts would be one. Mr. Curran.
Those fellows are a dime a dozen.
That's a good one. Mr. Adams?
You can bet your bottom dollar.
You can bet your bottom dollar would be a very good one. Mr. Kieran again.
That isn't worth 30 cents.
All right. Mr. Dreimer, you have one in mind?
Oh, that is bad.
There's a very famous one, Mr. Kieran.
Can I once again put in my 2 cents worth?
Mr. Adams?
A plug nickel.
A plug nickel. What this country needs is a good 5 cent cigar. Brother, can you spare a dime? Then a phrase that, going up into astronomical figures, a phrase we might remember today. Millions for defense. Can you think of any others?
Not 1 cent for tribute.
And, yes. don't take any wooden nickels. Did anyone mention that? Pass the buck might be another one. And probably the most famous phrase of all using any denomination of American money.
The scent of the roses may hang round it still.
That's a dandy. I was thinking of every question we use, Lucky Strike pays out $10. That, too, is a phrase that's getting to be very widely known. And now Mr. Cross maintains that it would be fine if every smoker were a sort of amateur tobacco expert.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, knowledge of just a few tobacco facts can make a big difference in the amount of enjoyment you'll get from smoking. For instance, it's decidedly worth your while to know that the finer, lighter leaf, the kind Lucky Strike buys, gives you a milder, better-tasting cigarette. And certainly it's important to know that this kind of tobacco, which you enjoy more, costs more. But we pay the price to get it for you. For example, at Hartsville, Tennessee last season, the American Tobacco Company paid 20% more than the market average for tobacco. At Springfield, Kentucky, 30% more. So it goes at market after market. We pay the price to get the finer, lighter, naturally milder tobaccos. And the best we buy goes into Lucky's. Remember these facts next time you buy cigarettes, and we believe you'll make the same choice as the overwhelming majority of independent tobacco experts. With these experts, with men who know tobacco best, it's Lucky's 2-to-1. So ask for Lucky Strike.
Thank you, Mr. Cross. This evening, Lucky Strike has paid out $25 and one set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Lucky Strike thanks you, Mr. Durante and Mr. Gunther, for your able assistance tonight, and particularly for the ad-lib remarks on the Russian situation, which we're very glad to get. Next week, the old trio will be on hand, Mr. Levant, Mr. Adams, and Mr. Kieran, together with our guest, who has recently been seen in Pride and Prejudice, Miss Mary Boland, who is now touring the Straw Hat Circuit. Remember, for every question we use, whether or not it's answered correctly, the sender gets the sum of $10. And if the question should happen to stump our experts, you not only get $25 more, but in addition, the complete 24-volume set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Send your letters with questions and the correct answers to Information, Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. And now, a parting message from Mr. L.A. Speed Riggs, famous tobacco auctioneer from Goldsboro, North Carolina.
And that chant, ladies and gentlemen, is just another way of saying that if you haven't tried a Lucky lately, you don't know what you're missing. And by the way, I've been suggesting on recent broadcasts that if you go on a weekend visit, you bring your host or hostess a carton of Luckies. Well, lots of people have written me that I should say take instead of bring. It's sort of flattering, isn't it, that I should have such careful listeners, even though they catch me off my guard. Yes, I've investigated the authorities, and I find that there's quite a preponderance of opinion in favor of the word take. So from now on, ladies and gentlemen, take your host or hostess a carton of Luckies. Bring them or take them, carry them or tote them, they're bound to make a hit. Remember, with men who know tobacco best, it's Lucky's 2-to-1.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.